All right, welcome back to part two of a series called See the World. One of the things that my wife, Chris, and I often say in our home is this statement. If you're a parent, you know this statement, do as I say. Do as I say. We say this statement all the time in our home, you know, go clean your room, you know, take that upstairs, you know, don't put that there, don't touch that, don't yell that, you know, whatever. It's constantly this kind of statement is do as I say. And if you're like a manager maybe of a department or you're like a team manager or project manager, you understand this statement, do as I say. If you're in the military, you understand this statement, do as I say, do as I say, do as I say. And I just thought that we would just kind of, you know, just dream a little, kind of have a, like just, kind of like one of those moments, you know. Wouldn't it be nice if everyone just did what we said? I mean, are you like, are you going to give me the answer to that today? You know, Ricky, no, I don't have the answer how to do that. But wouldn't it be nice if everybody just did what we told them to do? Here's what we know is that when we say that, do as I say, we know that doesn't last long, right? Like you might get it for a little bit, but you're not going to get it kind of forever. In fact, I think there's a better way of getting people to do what you say. And I think here's the better way. It's simply to do this, to say, see as I see. See as I see. That's really your goal, isn't it? As a parent, you want your child to learn to see as you see, because when they see as you see, they're more likely to do what you say. When people see as you see, they're more likely to do as you say. So think about if you're the leader of your organization or your team or something like that, or you're coaching a team or one of those kind of environments, you know, you're leading something in your home, in your life, whatever it may be. Simply, if you get somebody to see things the way that you see things, if you can get them to see, if you can get your employees or your team members to see the importance of executing it at a certain level, if you can get them to see, you know, the importance of how you should organize your business or how you should make that strategy happen, or maybe you just work in an environment where you're brought to the table and you're bringing your ideas to the table and you're trying to get your boss, your manager, your leaders to try to get you to get them to see as you see, and if they could just see as you see, they'd be more likely to do as you say. Whenever you have a child come up to you and say, you know, Mom, Dad, like, why do I have to do this? Anybody ever had that? Mom, why do I have to do math? Like, why is this important? Do you remember this question? You know, why geometry? You ever get that one? Like, why algebra? No, your kids just love it. That's amazing. Mike, it's completely different. No, my kids are like, hey, I want more of this, you know. Who are your kids? Come on, let's participate. Have you ever had a child come up to you and say something like that to you? Yes, you know, like, why do I have to do this? You know, like, why do I have to, you know, learn this science? When am I ever going to use this? This is pointless, you know? And what you try to do is say, just do it. Just do what I told you to do. You know, just do your homework. And maybe they go do it for a little while. But ultimately, what you really want them to do is to see as you see. Because if they will see as you see, they'd be more likely to do as you say. It's just kind of one of those things. It's not just a Jesus thing. It's not like a Christian thing. It's just a thing. It's just true. If you just get somebody to see as you see, they're more likely to do as you say. And this is what we said last week, that this is the same way the Father sees you as his sons and his daughters. This is the same way. That God knows just what we know, that whenever he can get you to see as he sees, you'll be more inclined to do what he says to do. When you see as God sees, you'll be more inclined to do what he says. And so this is what the Father wants you and I to do, just to learn to see things the way that he sees things, because when you do, you'll be more inclined or more likely to do what he says to do. And so this is what we talked about last week, and if you missed last week, you can always go to our podcast, wearebrave.church, and you can just kind of catch up there. And so Jesus, in Luke chapter 16, we're going to talk about this today, Luke chapter 16, Jesus is going to have this audience of people, and he is going to try to get them to see things the way that he sees things. And today he's going to talk about something very particular. He's going to kind of one central topic. And his goal here is to get them to see as he sees, right? And to give them the opportunity, hey, this is just the way that I see things. Because he knows, if I can get you to see the way that I see, you'll be more inclined to do what I say. And in Luke chapter 16, Jesus is going to have this really interesting audience of people, because Jesus is such a good teacher. He knows like the perfect timing. He knows the right audience to kind of gather around. And so Jesus gathers this audience. And here's who is this audience. And I think it's really important before we kind of read the text. In this audience, you got one group of people called the Pharisees. The Pharisees are simply like the religious gurus of the day. They're like the Bible, kind of like, we are by the law, we do it this way. And they would go through this old thing called the Torah, this Jewish law, and we're all about the law, and this is the way it is. And they would have pushed against everything that Jesus brought to the table. In fact, they wanted Jesus to be gone so much that they wanted to have him executed. They wanted to have him killed and crucified. And they were trying to constantly throw him into prison, constantly trying to trap him. And they just did not believe that he was the Messiah. And the Pharisees actually also, along with this thought, they thought that, you know, just the way that you got to heaven was just by how good you are and how many laws you followed. And so this is the group of Pharisees. And the Pharisees wanted nothing to do with Jesus. The second group in this audience are people called tax collectors. Now, how many of you guys love tax collectors? Exactly. Okay. Yeah, you're the tax collectors. Okay, so, right? So there's some tax collectors in this group. But here's the thing about this second group of people, tax collectors. Tax collectors are Jews, and their whole job is to work for the Roman government. They're going to their own people to collect the taxes for the Roman government, and then they're making a profit off of it. So they're despised amongst their own people. They are the traitor in your workplace. They're like the neighbor that you don't want to have. This is just, these are who the tax collectors are. And then you got this third group of people, the sinners. Like, this is a separate category. Can you just imagine, hey, let's have the Pharisees over here. You're messed up people. You know, you're the tax collectors, and you're the sinners. We're calling you out just what you are. You're just a sinner. So just sit over there, you sinners. And this is who Jesus is talking to. And then somewhere in that audience, he's got his followers. He's got his Christanos. He's got his Christians. He's got his disciples. And so this is his audience of people, you know. And even just saying that kind of intimidates me. Like, man, so thankful we don't have Pharisees, hopefully, or maybe got tax collectors and sinners. None of you are sinners. All right, that's perfect. Okay, so I'm doing pretty well. So Jesus, this is his audience that he's kind of engaging, and he is going to try to attempt to get that audience. This is so important. These are not all Christians. These are not people who've said, you're the way to God, you're the way to heaven. No. In fact, the majority of this audience is declining that to be true at all. And this is the audience that he's going to try to engage with. And so he's going to try to get them to see this particular thing the way that he sees it. And he knows he's going to get pushback. He knows he's going to offend some people. And they're going to be upset with him about what he's about to suggest and say. But he loves his children way too much to leave them there. And he knows, I can't let you figure this one out on your own. I've got to get you to see this the way that I see it because of what, this is so important, what it has the potential to do for you. Jesus was going to teach them something that would benefit them, not him. It was for them. It was that they could understand something that would just like literally transcend throughout generations and potentially, and when you see what we're going to talk about, I believe wholeheartedly Jesus was that this is so important, so important. In fact, Jesus taught on this more than he taught on anything. Because he knew what it had the power to do and how it had the power to change, this is true, the world. And this is what Jesus decides that he is going to help them to see the way that he sees. You guys ready? Here's what he says. I'm going to talk to you about, and this is what Jesus says, money. Jesus says, today's topic is money. Many of you right now, I'm heading for the exits. All right, and we're out of here, right? Always talking about money. Yeah, this here it goes. Listen. Before you jump out, before you leave too quickly, I just want you to know there is no special collection today. We are not going to be asking, I'm serious, we're not passing in extra buckets. We're not trying to do the whole, you know, three or four times thing. We're not asking you for a dollar on your way out. We're not doing that. All right, because here's why. This is not what that is about. What Jesus is inviting his audience to do is just to help you to see money the way that he sees money. When you think about that, just for a second, if this is your first time maybe to church, or maybe you're not the kind of church typical person, wouldn't you like to know how God sees money? Right? Wouldn't you like to know, and just, can you just kind of like, yeah, how does God see money? Because I feel like every time I'm in church, they're talking about money. You know, maybe, you know, you've kind of been there before. Today's just not about that. Today, I just kind of erase all of that. I'm just going to see how God sees money. And listen, if you're not a church person thing, you know, you're not sure about the whole religious Jesus thing, cross thing, that's okay. Just listen to me. Maybe today you'd at least just be willing to go, you know, maybe I'll just consider seeing money the way that God sees money. Or at least maybe you just know. And here's the thing. We're not forcing you into anything. You don't have to do anything with this. You can just say, okay, hey, I just learned how God sees money. A second group of people. If you're a person who you'd say, I'm a believer, you know, I'm a Christ follower, I'm a Christian, I'm a believer in who Jesus is, he died on the cross for me, then this is really important to you. Because when you decided to check that box off or raise that hand and say, I'm giving my life to the Lord, I'm getting baptized, my life is all about him, here's what you elected to do. You elected to make becoming Christ your number one goal. You're trying to live your life to become more like Christ. And so anytime Jesus comes onto the scene and says, I'm going to teach you about the ways that I see things, that should really pique your interest. Because ultimately what you've elected to do and what you signed up to do, what you said, I want to give my life to do, is become more like him. And so therefore, I want to see the way that he sees. And so I know you're super excited about this message because you're believers and you want to see things the way that God sees things. And so that's for you. So this is what Jesus is going to talk about in Luke chapter 16. And he's going to talk about money. And this is how he kind of begins. He didn't begin the way that I just began. In fact, he didn't even tell those about money because he knew that I'm probably going to lose the audience. And so, sorry, Jesus, for not probably teaching better. But this is how Jesus starts this story. And he's got this audience, and this is how Jesus starts the story in Luke chapter 16, verse 1. Here's what he says. All right, here's the story, because Jesus is always telling stories, really good storyteller. He's like, hey, there's a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. Now, if you're a Pharisee, you would have really kind of tuned in and grabbed your attention. If you love sports, you know, and you saw like Rudy's coming on or sports movies coming on, you're like, oh, I'm interested. I want to watch that. So the rich man, the reason why the Pharisees would have really got into this conversation very quickly right off the bat, because Jesus is so smart. He knows how to grab this audience attention. And he says, oh, there's a rich man. And the Pharisees' ears perk up because a Pharisee thought that the more wealthy you were, showed your righteousness level. In other words, like if you had a lot of wealth, then you were in good standing with God. So if you're really, really, really wealthy, then God must really, really, really like you. And so they kind of get this, oh, he's a rich man. He's a God man. You know, this is kind of, they're kind of into the story. And then there's a manager who's accused of wasting his possessions. And so the sinners are like, yeah, all right, you know, manager wasting possessions. I like that. That's good. Because they're sinners. They're just messed up people. Okay, so this is how he's engaging in his audience. And this is what Jesus is saying. And then he continues on in the story. And here's what he says. And so he calls in this guy, this manager, right? The rich man calls in his manager. And he says, what is this I hear about you? And then he says, give an account. I want you to give an account because you're going to have to give an account. Now remember, they don't know that he's talking about money. He's just give an account to your manager. They're like, yeah, I understand that. Because in this time, in this culture, if you were really, really wealthy, you would hire somebody to take care of your finances for you. And so they understood this idea that you were going to have to bring an account to the way that you're managing their money or their property. So he says, give an account of your management because you cannot be manager any longer, right? He says, I've heard you've been mismanaging your books. And I've heard that you've messed up the files and, you know, so bring the spreadsheets to me. Bring me the Excel documents. Bring me everything you have because I've heard you're misusing and you're mistreating everything that I've entrusted into your care. And so, of course, the audience is fully engaged into this kind of story and they're listening along, you know, they're kind of plugging in. And so Jesus continues into the story and here's what he says next. The manager says to himself, and he says, what will I do now? Now that's so important. Let me just pause there. He says, what am I going to do now? Because he realizes I'm losing my job. I'm not losing everything. He says, my master is taking away my job. He says, my master, the one who entrusted to me to take care of his stuff, is getting rid of me now. What am I going to do now? And he says, I'm not strong enough to dig because all I do is work in office and stuff like that. I'm not used to that whole kind of labor thing. And I'm too ashamed to beg. And this guy, this manager, realizes that his time is running out because he knows that he's fired. He's done. He's going to have to start cleaning out his office. After this final kind of meeting, he's done. There's no way. There's kind of no hope here. And so he's starting to try to figure out what is he going to do? How is he going to continue to pay for things? How is he going to make it? What is he going to tell his wife? What is he going to tell his kids? And so he starts to figure out what is he going to do. And so this manager, listen to me, he decides, I've got to come up with a plan. I've got to come up with something really quick because there's still bills to pay. There's still things to do. I still got, you know, the expenses are rolling in. I still got things I got to take care of. What am I going to do now? So he starts to devise this plan. And here's the plan that he comes up with. Here's what he decides to do. This manager says, I know what I'll do. So that when I lose my job here, people will welcome me into their houses. He starts to devise a plan that's going to prepare him for the future. He says, so he called in each one of his master's debtors. Now that's so important for you to understand. What this manager is acknowledging is this. Everything that I have and everything that I own really belongs to my master. And it's all just been entrusted to me. And so I'm going to call in my master's debtors because they're the ones that owe him because it's all his. And I'm going to call these debtors up. And he says, he goes to the first one. He asks the first kind of debtor, the person that's in debt. He says, how much do you owe my master? Not how much do you owe me. How much do you owe my master? Because my master is the one that's in charge of all of these resources and all of this money. And then the guy replies back this. And he says, 900 gallons of olive oil, he replied. The manager tells him, now look what the manager decides to do. He says, take your bill, sit down quickly. Sit down quickly. because I'm running out of time. Time is getting up, like time is going away. We're only a couple hours away, maybe a couple days away, maybe a couple weeks away. Time is running up, and so I need to devise a plan quickly. So come quickly, and you're going to go ahead and pay this bill, and we're going to cut it in half, and we're going to turn it into 450. And so this manager devises this plan, and the audience kind of hears this. Now, just imagine you're hearing this story for the first time, or you're watching this in a movie, or you're reading this on, you know, social media, or something, going, gosh, you know, that's kind of messed up. You know, that's messed up. And Jesus is like, yeah, but then he does it again. Watch what this manager does next. So he goes on to another guy that's in debt, and he says, then he asks the second guy, how much do you owe? He says, 1,000 bushels of wheat, he tells him. He says, take your bill and make it 800. Now, if you're in the audience and you hear that, no one's cheering probably for this guy. Yeah, you're an awesome guy. I mean, you've not only mismanaged what's been entrusted to you, now you're stealing from your master. Yeah, we're on your side. If you were watching that movie, you'd say, man, I hope something bad happens to that guy, right? You'd say, gosh, that seems messed up. Just by a show of hands, just kind of be honest. How many of you guys would say that? I want to have that guy as a friend. Yeah, none of you. How many of you guys would say, that guy should go to prison, he should go to jail, you know, whatever, we should throw him out, fired, you know, you're fired. Okay, you know, whatever. That wasn't any kind of political statement. Don't send me emails, okay? He's just saying, listen, you know, we can't entrust these things to you. We're going to have to let you go. And the people that are listening into this audience are kind of fully engaged in this and thinking, gosh, that's kind of wrong. You know, the sinners are even going, man, that's kind of messed up. Not only did he mismanage what this guy has entrusted to him, but not only that, he's actually taking it and he's stealing it for his own benefit. Listen to me. He's actually taking what has been entrusted to him and he's using it to protect his own future. He takes what does not belong to him and gets so concerned about himself that he uses it to prepare for his own future. And it's just, man, that just seems messed up. That's wrong in every single way. And then Jesus makes a turn in the story, and he's such a good storyteller. He takes a turn in the story that I think kind of make the audience just kind of go, what? Like, sir? Let's watch what Jesus says. Jesus says this, verse 8. He says, and the rich man, remember the guy that's in charge here, the master, the rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal. Like, what? He admired him? Like, what? That's a joke. Jesus, this is like the worst story in history. How in the world with this guy that he just stole from? This guy's going to can him. He's going to fire him. And now you're telling me that he admired this man? Like, what? Jesus. And Jesus goes, yeah. He admired him. Like, what? Yeah. He says, here's why. And he comes on to say, because the rich man had to admire the dishonest rascal for being so shrewd. What? Jesus, help me out. Shrewd, understand. He says, yeah, he's got to be so shrewd. This word shrewd means to act wisely. It wasn't that Jesus was condoning the behavior of this unjust steward. Because the guy has stolen, he's robbed, he's mismanaged, he's mistreated, right? He's all about himself, kind of looking out for himself and his own kind of future. And Jesus is not in any way, shape, or form condoning that behavior. He says, but I am going to acknowledge, and I am going to give him some credit for being wise. Because he's protecting his own thing. He's kind of looking out for himself, and he's being so shrewd. And then this is Jesus, remember the audience? You know, you got the sinners, the tax collectors, always the audience is so important here. And then Jesus makes this application statement, and I think this would have really gathered their attention. It says, and it is true that the children of this world, he makes a distinction now. And of course, if you're in the audience, you're going, children of the world? Like, we're all children of the world. What does that mean, children of the world? And Jesus goes, no. There's children of the world. Maybe some of you are sitting over on this side, you know, the Pharisees, the tax collectors, the sinners. These are the children of the world. He says, it's true. The children of this world, unbelievers, non-followers of me, are more shrewd, more wise, in dealing with the world, something different, around them than are the children of the light. And when he says children of the light, if you're a follower of Jesus, your ears kind of perk up because you know that Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the light of the world. And so immediately the believers realize that Jesus is talking about them when he says the children of the light. So Jesus has made a distinction between two groups of people. One, unbelievers, children of the world. Two, believers, children of the light. And he says, basically, what I'm trying to get at, what I'm trying to suggest to you is this idea that the people of this world are more wise in the way that they treat the world around them than are the children of the light. And if you're a follower of Jesus, you're kind of feeling the way you're feeling right now. You're like, I think I'm getting it. Not really understanding Jesus. Help me to understand this. And because Jesus, I told you, he's such a good teacher. He's not going to leave you hanging. He's not going to leave you questioning. Like, what is he really getting at? Jesus says, okay, I know your heart. I know you're kind of confused. Where is this going? Jesus goes, listen. Verse 9, here's what he says. Here's the lesson. And now many of you are like, oh, okay, yeah, here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources to benefit others and make friends. Then when your possessions are gone, because your stuff doesn't go with you. So he says, when your possessions are gone, when your money is running out, they will welcome you. Who's they? Those that you made friends will welcome you to an eternal home. And all of a sudden, I think some of them started to kind of go, I think I understand kind of what Jesus is trying to get at. The principle that Jesus is trying to convey is this. The one of the just steward, rather than the unjust one. Jesus is not condoning the behavior of the unjust steward. He is condoning the shrewdness of it. But the unjust steward, listen to me, saw his master's resources as a means for his own personal enjoyment. And that's why he just took that money and kind of said, I'm going to kind of watch out for myself and I'm going to reduce the debt down, even though it's unjust and that's wrong in every which way about it. But I'm going to do that in order to kind of pay attention to and focus on my own personal enjoyment and advancement. But Jesus did not want his followers to do that. He wanted them to be just stewards, not unjust stewards. And so if we understand this principle, if we understand this idea that everything we own, everything you and I own is a gift from God, and realize that God is the owner of everything and that we are simply his stewards. And when we understand this, we are to use simply the master's resources to further the master's goals. Here's what Jesus is ultimately saying. Listen to me. Jesus is saying, I just want you to focus in on this. And I want you to recognize that everything that you own and everything you possess is simply a tool. It is simply a tool. Here's what Jesus said in Matthew 6:19. Look what he says. He says, do not, this is another teaching of Jesus. He says, do not store up for your treasures, yourselves treasures on earth where moths and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But then he says, but store up for yourselves treasures in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Jesus teaches the same exact teaching on the Sermon on the Mount. I just want you to understand this idea that God sees money as a tool. When he says, I want you to, listen to me, I want you to take the unjust steward. And the unjust steward simply makes this idea that I'm going to take what's not mine and I'm going to use it for the benefit of myself. And Jesus says, that is not what I want you to do with your money. I want you to be the just steward. The one who takes the worldly resources. Put that verse back, verse 9, if you can. He says, here's the lesson. Can you put that back up for me for just a second? He says, here's the lesson. Use your worldly resources, not just money, but use all of your resources for the benefit of others. What was the unjust steward using his money for? Self. He says, I want you to use your worldly resources to the benefit of others and make friends. And I want not just friends, but to bring people into the kingdom of heaven. To actually, if you look at the phrasing of make friends, it's the Greek phrasing of this idea that you're going to join them into the body or to the bridegroom of Christ. In other words, you're going to use your worldly resources as a tool to bring people into my kingdom. He says, then, when your possessions and all of your resources are gone, and when you're gone and all that comes to an end, they will welcome you. Who will welcome you? The people that you helped bring to eternity with your resources into their eternal home. Jesus is saying, I want you to use your money as a tool. You can write that down if you're taking notes. God says, I see your money as a tool. Now, let me just brag on some people, because when I wrote this down, there were some people that really came across my mind. When I read this, I thought about some people that make Brave possible each and every week. And if you're a guest here for the first time, and if you're here just first time, I just want to brag on some of those and all of us at Brave and so many of you at Brave for what you do. Here's the truth. If you're the first time here, I just want you to know, you would not be sitting where you're sitting today if it wasn't for some people who understood that. Your kids would not be up here on the stage today receiving anything in a jar, and you wouldn't be celebrating an occasion, and you wouldn't be going out to lunch with them to celebrate, and you wouldn't be crying saying, oh, they look so beautiful up there, praise Jesus, if it wasn't for some people who understood that principle. There's some people who make this happen each and every week, and it doesn't happen without your resources. And I just wanted to take an opportunity in the middle of today's talk and say thank you. Thank you for acknowledging and seeing your resources and seeing your money the way that God sees it, as a tool to make him known into the lives of people. And if it wasn't for this group of people, everything you see in this curtains and the sound and the instruments and the kids ministry that's going on and the parking lot and all the things that go into making this happen and the picnic you're about to attend, it doesn't happen unless there's people who see their money as a tool for God to use to bring them into the kingdom of heaven. And when Jesus is talking to this group of people, he's saying, I want you to live your life like a just steward, not like this unjust steward who focused on all of building his own wealth and building his own thing. And Jesus is like, I want you to understand that God sees your money as a tool. Many people in this room, you can write this down for taking notes, and I think there's so many of them. They go way above and beyond. Let me just brag on another group of people if I can, just brag on our church a little bit. I love our church, so it's okay for me to brag on it because I'm the pastor and leader of it, so I can just brag on you all day. Some of you open up your home each week. For you, you don't just see your money as a tool. You take it to another level. You say, man, everything that I own is a tool. And so you open up your homes throughout the week. We call them connect groups. And you open up your homes. And some of you take people to church. You say, I'm picking you up. I'm bringing you. Some of you probably bribe somebody to get here today for lunch. And you decided you're going to use lunch as a tool. You're going to do whatever you can to use it as a tool to help somebody come into an encounter with God where their eternal destination will be changed. Here's what ultimately some of you and many of you get. You get this as a church, and I'm so proud of our church as a church. Let me just say also, too, people who get this, I want to brag on us as a church as well. I just love bragging on our church. It's so good. We have the best church in the world. I should say that. I'm the pastor, so. No, we're like somewhere in the middle. No, let's just, okay. But as a church, you guys remember a couple weeks ago? We did a special collection for people in Houston we've never met in our lives. Do you remember this? Some of us had a cousin that lives there that was affected by the thing, or they weren't, but they knew somebody that was. We had another kind of person that we knew. And so in just two Sundays, we raised $1,200 as a church. You guys did that. And then all of it, I'm telling you, we sent out all of it, split the checks right there to the families, direct cash. We don't keep any of it. We kept just a little bit of it, like I said, here for some of those that were affected here within our own church. But they got $500 checks a family. Listen, and we said, well, that doesn't seem like a lot, but listen, I'm just proud of you for responding to it. And we said, we know that we're a smaller church, that we're not able to get millions and do all that. If we could, we would. But we said, we're going to do for one what we wish we could do for all. And so I'm just proud of you as a church for responding to that. But here's ultimately what many of you got who contributed to that. What many of you got, you understood this principle that my temporary resources are simply like this idea, a tool or an opportunity to change someone's eternal destination. My temporary resources are an opportunity to change someone's eternal destination. Listen, when you give an account, can I just talk to you for a second? When you give an account to your master in heaven for your resources and how you've handled them, the question will not be, what do you have to show for it? What do you have to show for it? That will not be the question that you will be asked. What do you have to show for it? Show me how many cars you have. Show me the houses you got. Show me all the stuff you did. Show me your experience. Show me all the photos. Man, you went and saw the mountain. That's crazy. I've never seen that before. And I created it, but I never saw it. All right. What do you have to show for it? The question that you're going to be asked is, who do you have to show for it? Who do you have to show for it? Who do you have to show for the resources I entrusted to you? Because that's what matters to me. Because when all your possessions are gone, you're going to have some people in heaven, maybe or maybe not, welcoming you into eternal home. how you saw your money. And this is how Jesus sees your money. He says, who is it that you're going to have to show for it? Then Jesus continues on in the teaching. He says, here's what Jesus says. He's back into the story, and he says, whoever can be trusted with very little, and of course, the audience is feeling like you're feeling, oh, Jesus, this is kind of heavy. I don't know about this guy, you know, of course. But he says, hey, whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with little will also be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy, you know so many times he says trustworthy, in handling worldly wealth, in other words, there's a different kind of wealth, who will be trusted with true riches? What are true riches? Well, not worldly wealth, eternal wealth, treasures that are stored in heaven. He says, if I can't trust you with what you have now in your world, how can I trust you with eternal things? Because everything you hold in your hand today is temporary, because none of it goes into eternity except for your soul. So he's like, I just want you to focus in on this idea that so many of you cannot be trusted with worldly wealth, and how can I trust you with true riches? He says, and if you have not been trustworthy, there it is again, with someone else's property, who will give you property of your own? Here's the second way that God sees your money. This is how God sees your money. God sees your money as a test. Can you be trusted? God sees your money, you can write that down, as a test. This is a test. It's a test to find out whether or not you can be deemed trustworthy for God to entrust things to you of eternal consequence. He says, who can be trusted? Can you be trusted by the way that you manage and steward your resources? And this is why Jesus understands this, and this is what Jesus knows about this idea. And he's looking in, he's watching how we use it, how I use it, and here's why this matters to him so much. This is what we're going to get at, and this is what he says. Because he knows what you know. You don't have to be a Jesus-believing person. You don't have to be a person that gives to local church to understand this truth, what we're about to say. Here it is. How we manage what we assume is ours, it's because you assume it's yours, because you can touch it tangibly, and you work for it, and so you think that it's yours, and you're the one that thinks that you give you breath in the lungs, and you just decide to wake up in the morning and say, hey, I think I'm going to have life today. Yeah, why not me? You manage what you assume is yours, because it's not really yours, because you're going to have to give an account for who it really belongs to. But how we manage what we assume is ours reflects our devotion to the one to whom it actually belongs. So true, isn't it? You think about a child in your home. You ever had, just raise your hand, participate with me. You ever had a child misuse something you bought them of value? Look at that. Oh. I just got a little some response there. I was like, oh, man, like where's my shoe? You know, like that's, I felt it coming. God sees you the same way. Here's what he knows. Whenever you mistreat the resources that I've entrusted to you, it devalues who I am in your life. So the reason why you get so upset as a parent when your child mistreats the thing that you bought them is because what it shows them is that they don't have respect for you or for the things that belong to them that you've entrusted to them. And it reflects their devotion to you, the one who it actually belongs, who's the one that actually made the purchase. This is why it gets to you so much. Because this truth, how we manage what we assume is ours, reflects our devotion to the one to whom it actually belongs. And Jesus is getting at something so much deeper than just your money in your pocket. This is so much more than just about money. And then Jesus is about to make this amazing statement. You've probably heard this statement before. And Jesus goes into this teaching, and he's engaging the audience, and they're kind of tracking with him. They know where he's leading, and this is what he says next. He says, no one can serve two masters. It says, either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. Now listen, if you're in the audience, you're going, I know that Jesus, I know this one. It's got to be Satan, because Satan is your enemy. Oh yeah, we've heard about that guy. I don't know if that's true, but we've heard about that guy. Satan is, you know, yeah, he's your enemy. He's the one. Yeah, no, we're not for Satan, but we're not really for you. I don't know. So Jesus is going, no. The one that stands in my biggest way, it's not Satan. Satan is not my greatest enemy for your heart. He says, no one can serve two masters. And here are the options that you have to choose from. Either God or your money. You cannot serve God and money. Did you know that God's chief competitor for your heart is your money? God's chief competitor for your heart is your money. And Jesus says, this is what brings me the greatest competition for your heart. It's your money. And it's what you do with it. And all the things that I entrust to you. And this is the thing that gets in the way of me doing all that I want to do through you. Why? Because God sees, listen, what we just said a minute ago. God sees how we use our money as a reflection of who we actually belong to. Think about the joint that Jesus said, wherever your treasure is, there your heart is also. He's been teaching on this, and he's trying to get his followers to understand this idea. How you use your money really determines and shows whose you really are. How you use your money displays who you really belong to and what you're really about. And he's also talking to this group of people called the Pharisees, who thought their righteousness, remember that, was all about their money. And so look how he talks to those that are his Pharisees, because he's trying to drive something home to the Pharisees in the audience. And look what he says to them. He says, the Pharisees who dearly love their money. That's why it's so important to understand the audience, what Jesus is talking to. He goes, I know I'm talking to a group of people who love their money, and they love to display how generous they are and all this kind of stuff. And Jesus is like, gosh, that is so far from the truth. And it says that when the Pharisees heard Jesus talk about this, that his biggest competitor for their heart was their money, it says they scoffed at him. It actually means to turn up their nose. They're like, Jesus, what are you talking about? You know? And Jesus continues on, the story continues on. It says, yeah, you like to appear righteous in public, don't you? You like to brag about in social media, hey, look what I did today, so generous, look at me, true smiley face, like me, you know? And Jesus says, hey, this is, you'd like to let everybody know how generous you are. But you are so not generous because your hearts are so far from me. Here's what I know about this idea. And then Jesus concludes this story, and this is how he wraps it up. He says, you like to appear righteous in public. But he says, but I know your heart. And what the world honors is detestable in the sight of God. Can I just tell you something today, what Jesus is getting at? I think it's so important for us to understand this truth, that generosity has nothing to do with your money. Generosity has nothing to do with your money. It has everything to do with your heart. Your generosity, and you know how I know that, and you know that, and I know that, because there's a lot of wealthy people. There's a lot of wealthy people, and you're, of course, none of you are wealthy. You're like, no, not me, you know. Even though the world comparison, okay, you're way up there in the world. But generosity has nothing to do with your amount of money, because you know a lot of rich people who are not generous. And you know what I've seen in my life, and I'm sure you've seen in your life? There are a lot of people who have nothing, and they give everything. Generosity has nothing to do with your money. Jesus would say, it has everything to do with your heart. And this is why it's such a big deal to me. Jesus, let me just set you free of something. I'm going to set a church free today, and you're going to feel so good when you walk out here today. Did you know that Jesus doesn't want or need your money? He owns everything. He can take and he can give. He's not going, man, if I just had a dollar, somebody could just... If I could build my church, if someone would just give me a dollar, I don't know. It is not what Jesus wants from you. He wants it for you. And he wants more than anything your heart. And he knows what stands in the gap the most is your money. Because he doesn't want you to depend upon your money and your job to get you through. He says, no, I want you to depend upon me to get you through. Because I'm God, and I'm Lord, and I'm King, and I love you so deeply. And I want you to trust in me in every area of your life. Stop trusting in your finances and just begin to trust in me. And so Jesus makes a way, and of course we'll talk about this in a couple of months. He makes a way called the tithe, and he makes an opportunity, kind of a way to kind of do that. But he says, listen, more than that, I just want your heart. Did you know you can tithe without your heart? In fact, the Pharisees were doing this. They were giving 10% of their income, but their hearts were never a part of it. And then remember, he rewards the widow, and he says, she gives way more than many of you. Because this is not about the degree. This is about how much heart I have of the person. If you remember the story of the widow gives everything that she possibly owned. And so God says, this is her heart condition. This is why I put this on the table as a test. Because I want your whole heart. And this is what stands in the way. And Jesus says, I want to have your heart. So the question today, big question. Are you willing to see your money as God sees money? As a tool and as a test, as a tool to bring people into eternal salvation with Jesus Christ, simply as a resource. And here's what God knows. Oh, and we're going to close out with this thought. Here's what God knows. Listen to me. Last thing, last note if you're taking notes. When you see your money, this is how you're going to know. Pastor Ricky, okay, I'm in. All right, I'm tracking with you. Maybe I do need to start to see my money the way that God sees money. Okay. How am I going to know that? When you see money as God sees money, this is what's going to happen to you. And you may not be there yet. Maybe you're headed there. Maybe you want to go there. Maybe you're already there. When you see money as God sees money, I know this from personal experience. This is what's going to happen. You'll be free to serve God with your whole heart. And you'll never be free to serve God with your whole heart until you're freed of money. Until it doesn't consume your every thought. Until the point that when you give generously to the Lord, back to what's his in the first place. When you come underneath it, I'm telling you, the freedom that comes off of your home financially, when you get to the place where you say, you know what? We don't own a thing anyways. All of this is given to us by God and sustained by God, so I don't have to panic or worry about this because it's not me the one that's owning this anyway. So many of us put financial pressure on yourself because you think you're the one that's meeting the need and supplying it. But it's Christ in you that supplies it. And so he says, I'm inviting you into freedom. And I want your whole heart. And to understand this truth that all things are mine and you're just as simply a steward of what I'm entrusting to you. And when you begin to trust in me at that degree and at that level, I get your whole heart. And I want you to be free to serve me with your whole heart. So question, are you willing to see your money as God sees money? No special collection, no twist at the end. Just a question for you. Are you willing to see your money and your resources and your home and your car and everything that you own and everything that God has entrusted to you as a tool, as a test to bring people into eternal salvations with Christ? That's just a question. So here's what I'd like to do today, and this is kind of on the fly, and then we're going to be dismissed. This is how we're going to end it today. I'm going to give you the opportunity to respond because I don't want to just leave you hanging going, man, I don't know. Maybe for you today, you say, yeah, I want to do that. But this wasn't just enough. You go, I'd love to sit down and talk about this more because I have a theology about this. I was sitting in a church one day and here's what the guy said to me and here's what my parents taught me and I don't know about that, or I gave, what about those people on TV? You know, what about all that, you know, turn in your hanky and you get a $1 million check in return? I don't know, weird stuff. Because, you know, you've seen it. It's just weird. And so, you know, you're like, I don't know what to do with all of this. Here's what I'm invite you to do. As a church, we're going to do something. And as a church, you know, it's really your money anyway. So you're buying it because you paid for it. But this is just what we're going to invite you to do. There's a book that you can go to the Brave Tent. And the Brave Tent and Lynn's and some of her team are just finding out about this. But we're going to do this. Just because I believe in this so heartily as your pastor. I believe this is wholeheartedly. This is so much truth to this, and I want you free from it. I want you to know that God is the one that you can trust and learn how to manage God's money. There's a book called Managing God's Money. And I don't want you to have to go home and order it. I'll order it for you. All right? And if you can't afford to pay for it, we'll buy it. All right? And I don't get, you go, oh, he's getting a deal off of this. I ain't getting no deal off of this. All right? I ain't getting no, there's no contract. I guarantee this author doesn't even know who I am. Okay? There is no attachment here to some kind of, okay, I'm not getting a penny off of this. All right? We're just going to simply order the book for you. It's called Managing God's Money. It's by Randy Alcorn. If you go to the Brave Tent and you're serious about getting to know how God views his money, I want you just to write your name down, come back next week, and we'll have a copy for you. We'll do our best to order as many as we can. We'll put a name on it, and we'll just set it in the back, and you can just walk back, no strings attached. If you can pay for it and you want to pay for it, we'll just charge $10 a book, and I know that's about an average of what they're going for on Amazon. No tricks. I just believe wholeheartedly that God wants you to see your money the way that he sees it. This is one of the greatest books out there, I think, that you could read to help get the education on to read it. Amen? Let's bow our head and let's pray. Father, thank you for this word today. We're grateful, God, that you put us in a position like you have today to help us to see as you see.
And Lord, just like amongst that audience, just like amongst our audience today and all of us in this room, myself included, this is not always the easiest teaching, but because you want so much for us and you want our whole heart, God, and you want nothing to stand in the way. For many of us, money stands in the way. It's just something we refuse to give up. And today, you're calling us to give it up. It's not about the amount, but just give up that hardness in our heart to give to the thing that you value most. Your sons and your daughters coming into an eternal destination with you. So God, would you just help us to see as you see? Would you help us to see money and our resources, the things you've entrusted to us as a tool and as a test to bring people into an eternal destination with you? And Jesus, today, we never want to leave this opportunity, an opportunity for your children to come to know you. If today you're here for the first time, or maybe you just want to make a decision to follow Christ, you've never made the decision to follow him, and today it's more than just a money decision, it's a life decision. It's a decision to say, I need to give my life to Christ. I'm getting that nudge even as you talk, and I'm getting that whisper, and I know that God is telling me to respond to this word, to give my life fully over to him. If that's you in the room, would you just lift your hand right where you are? Just lift your hand high so that I can see it, because it's just kind of darkened towards the back. Amen, hand in the air. Anybody else? Just say, man, that's me. I know that God's nudging me to make a decision to follow him today, and I want to make that decision. Amen. Let's pray together. Father, thank you so much for those that have made that decision today in their hearts to follow you. God, I pray as they make that decision that, number one, they know you're God and you're King and you're Lord of their life. Lord, help them to guide them and to lead them into a life that's changed forever because of your love. In Jesus' name, can we celebrate those in the room who made that decision today? And if you didn't make that decision today, I encourage you to go by the Brave Tent on your way out. If you want to order the book, Managing God's Money, and you're serious about this, and you say, man, I really want to learn this. I want to read it for myself. I want to absorb it for myself. Hey, go to the Brave Tent. Just simply write down, hey, I want to order the book, one copy for my family. If you can do that, that would help us out. And then if you say, hey, I'll pay next week or I'll pay now. And then if not, then just say, I need the, you know, kind of it paid for me. And then we'll be happy and be glad to pay it for you so you can have this book as a tool. Hey, outside of that, listen, when we're out of here today, on the back of your notes that has your Brave Picnic, you know, kind of instructions and directions. And so we hope to see you over at the Brave Picnic. We would love, if this is your first time with us today, don't go, oh, I don't know anybody. Listen, we're all there to get to know one another, continue to grow in our community, continue to grow as a church. It's just cool to see what God is doing. So we would love to see you, even if it is for just 30 minutes or maybe just, you know, 45 minutes over at the picnic. We'll have some food and snacks and all that's provided there. So we hope to see you there at the Brave Picnic. We'll see you guys back for next week for part 3 of See the World. We'll see you guys later.